church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Health and Healing. I am John Baptist Tumusime. This Wednesday, December 8th, the Catholic Church celebrated the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. According to church teaching, Mary, the mother of Christ, was conceived without original sin, and that is what is called the Immaculate Conception. Pope Francis led the faithful in the traditional non-angelus prayer at St. Peter's Square, and in his reflection, he described the beauty of Mary's heart, saying her encounter with the angel Gabriel revealed her deep humility. Francesca Melo reports.
Addressing the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Angelus on the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Pope Francis turned to the day's liturgy, which brings us into the house of Nazareth, where she receives the angel's annunciation. Within intimate domestic walls, the Pope noted, the Gospel gives us a detail that reveals the beauty of Mary's heart. Pope Francis noted that the angels refer to Mary as being full of grace. If this is true, continued the Pope, it means that she is void of evil, she is without sin, she is immaculate. The Pope noted that Mary is troubled at the angel's greeting. Receiving grand greetings, honours and compliments sometimes brings the risk of provoking pride and presumption, said the Pope, adding that Jesus is not gentle with those who go in search of greetings, adulation and visibility. Mary does not exalt herself, as the angel's greeting seemed too grand for her. That humility attracts God's eyes, explained the Pope. In this scenario, we see a marvellous characteristic of Mary's heart. She does not lay claim to anything, explained the Pope, for in her humility she knows she receives everything from God. In this manner, the Pope continued, free from herself, she is completely directed towards God and others. This is true humility, said the Pope. Pope Francis went on to note the importance of the declaration being made within the walls of a house and not in a main square. In that little house of Nazareth beat the greatest heart that any creature has ever had, said the Pope. He explained that within these humble walls, God changed history, and that even today God's grace loves to operate there more than in great historical events. Bringing his reflection to an end, Pope Francis invited all those listening to ask the Madonna for the grace, that she free us from the misleading idea that the Gospel is one thing and life is another, and that she enkindle enthusiasm in us for the ideal of sanctity, which has nothing to do with holy cards and pictures. Instead, he said, sanctity or holiness is about living humbly and joyfully what happens each day, freed from ourselves, with our eyes fixed on God and the neighbour we meet. Let us not lose heart, concluded the Pope, for no one who asked for her help has ever been abandoned. I'm Francesca Merlo.
Earlier on Wednesday morning, Pope Francis had visited the statue of the Immaculate Conception at the Square of Spain, or in Italian, Piazza di Spagna, in the center of Rome. Father Benedict Mayaki has the details.
On Wednesday morning, just before 6:15 a.m., while it was still dark and the city of Rome was just beginning to wake up, Pope Francis went to Piazza di Spagna for a private act of veneration to Our Lady on the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception, liturgically celebrated on the 8th of December by the Church. A statement by the Holy See Press Office said that the Holy Father placed a bouquet of white roses at the base of the column where the statue of the Madonna is, and he turned to Our Lady in prayer, asking for her intercession for the miracle of a cure for the many sick and for healing for peoples suffering from wars and the climate crisis. Pope Francis also prayed for conversion to melt the hearts of stone of those who build walls to separate themselves from the pain of others. Afterwards, the Pope left the piazza and went to the Basilica of St. Mary Major, where he prayed before an icon of Maria Salus Popoli Romani before returning to the Vatican. For 2 years in a row, Pope Francis has made a private act of veneration to Our Lady instead of the Roman tradition of a public gathering at the Spanish Steps to mark the solemnity. The Holy See Press Office announced on the 27th of November that the decision was made to avoid the formation of a crowd and the risk of spreading the COVID-19 virus. The decision to avoid the public visit also came after the Italian government unveiled further COVID-19 restrictions effective from the 6th of December. For many years, the popes have had a tradition of making the trip from the Vatican to Rome's Piazza di Spagna on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which celebrates the singular grace and privilege by which the Most Blessed Virgin Mary, in the first instant of her conception, in view of the merits of Jesus Christ, the Savior of the human race, was preserved from all stain of original sin. The dogma of the Immaculate Conception was believed by the Church from the very beginning, but was only formally defined in 1854 by Pope Pius IX. In 1857, a commemorative column was raised in Piazza Mignanelli, close to the Spanish Steps in Rome. The tradition of the Pope visiting the square on the feast dates back to 1953. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Bishop Vezi Marie Monot of the Diocese of Weso in Congo-Brazzaville. The Holy Father has at the same time nominated Father Jelase Amel Kemam to be the new Bishop of Weso. The bishop-elect is a priest of the same diocese. He was born in 1972 and ordained a priest in 1999. After his ordination, he pursued higher studies in canon law at the Pontifical Urban University and graduated with a PhD degree in 2010. At the time of this nomination, Father Kema was serving as the National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in Congo-Brazzaville and as a professor of canon law at Cardinal Emily Biyaenda Major Seminary of Theology. After his ordination, he served in various capacities, including as a parish priest, rector of the Minor Seminary of Oweso, and as Vicar General of Oweso. Humanitarian agencies in West Africa have warned that over 35 million people in the region, including the Saheli, are threatened by hunger following a short rain season that has seriously affected harvests. Mihika Acharya filed the following report.
Growing food insecurity that is already affecting tens of millions of people across West Africa and the Sahel must not be ignored by the international community, UN humanitarians said on Tuesday. The alert comes as new data from the region indicated that almost 36 million people are expected to be acutely food insecure by the time next year's lean season comes around. This is usually in June, July, and August, but it could start as early as next March. This represents an alarming 24% increase in 2020, according to the latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification Survey, which aid agencies use to gauge levels of need. Here's Olo Sib from the World Food Programme speaking from Senegal.
We should be aware that the lean season is coming very fast. Normally, it's supposed to start in June, but this year, we have the feeling that it will start earlier, sometime in March, given that the food stocks are very low, given that there is no enough water for pasture for livestock, we anticipate an earlier lean season, especially for the pastoralists in the region.
Latest food insecurity survey data pointed to 2.6 million people in IPC4, which denotes emergency status, and a further 13,600 in famine-like conditions, IPC5, in inaccessible parts of Borno State in northeast Nigeria. Mika Acharya, UN News.
The Catholic Diocese of Ondo in Nigeria has called for prayers following the abduction of its priest, Father Joseph Ajayi. Father Ajayi was abducted on Monday as he drove on Akure Ikele Highway, and his whereabouts are still unknown. The abductors got in touch with the two priests in the diocese to inform them of his abduction. Kidnappings for ransom have become common in Nigeria, and the government seems to be too weak to stop them. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The World Health Organization has said the existing COVID-19 vaccines are capable of protecting people who contract the Omicron variant from severe disease. The assurance comes after reports that the variant can evade the Pfizer vaccine. Reports from Morocco say four lecturers from the Hassan University in the city of Setati appeared in court on Wednesday charged with asking sexual favors from female students in order to give them better grades. A fifth lecturer is facing charges of indecent assault and bodily violence. Women's organizations and humanitarian groups have welcomed the development, saying the acts of the lecturers was a sign of a society in which sexual violence remains widespread and many women do not feel confident in reporting their experiences through concerns over possible reprisals or the perceived damage to their reputation and that of their families. The Uganda Army, officially known as the Uganda People's Defense Forces, has protested against the financial sanctions imposed on Major General Abdel Kandiho, who heads the country's military intelligence. The U.S. Treasury Department imposed sanctions on Mr. Kandiho and other military intelligence officers recently, saying they arrested, detained, and physically abused people due to their nationality and political views, especially in the elections held early this year. In a statement issued on Tuesday, the army said the sanctions had been imposed without due process and with total disregard of the principle of fair hearing. According to the sanctions, Mr. Kandiho and others cannot travel to the United States, and their assets in the U.S. will be frozen. The United Nations has strongly condemned violence and looting which took place recently in the Northern Unity State. One humanitarian worker was killed and several civilians were injured in the violence. The attackers looted UN food stores and health facilities. Reports from South Africa say Parliament failed on Tuesday to secure the two-thirds majority it needed to amend the constitution to pave the way for land confiscation without compensation. The bill was drafted by the ruling African National Congress, but was rejected by the opposition parties, that is the Economic Freedom Fighters and the Democratic Alliance. The opposition parties said they did not vote the bill because they wanted the people who were in possession of land that was grabbed during the apartheid era to be compensated. The country's white minority was the target of the bill because some of its members drove black South Africans from fertile land during the apartheid period. And now, our feature, Health and Healing. Reports from many countries around the world say the new COVID-19 variant Omicron is driving up cases causing a lot of concern. The variant has spread in many African countries, especially among those whose citizens continue to travel to and from Southern Africa. The variant was detected over 3 weeks ago by South African scientists and was declared a variant of concern 2 weeks ago by the World Health Organization, the WHO. Contrary to the first reports, the first patient was a Botswana national whose samples were collected in Botswana and sent to South Africa for testing because that is the only country on the African continent that has modern scientific laboratories for such sophisticated tests and analysis. Shortly later, South African scientists discovered that actually the variant was already spreading in the country, especially in the Gauteng province, where the number of infections and admissions continue to surge. Dr. Salim Karim is a South African epidemiologist and a member of the African Task Force for the Coronavirus, which played a role in advising the World Health Organization to declare Omicron a variant of concern. He explains.
When we look at the virus itself, it has several mutations that should confer on it the ability to transmit faster. But we, of course, we need to know whether it's actually doing so. Now, when we look at the epidemiological data, we've compared the three previous waves and the rate at which they increase in the first 7 days after the wave threshold. And what we have found is that the Omicron variant is doubling faster than any of the three previous waves. What we have is that in Omicron, over the first 7 days, the doubling time is 1.5 days. In other words, there are twice as many cases every day and a half. In the previous three waves, due to the Delta, Beta, and the 614G variant, the average was around 2 to 2.2 days in this initial upswing of cases. So certainly the early evidence, and I have to say it's very early preliminary evidence, suggests that it is more transmissible.
According to Dr. Karim, although the Omicron variant is spreading rapidly, it has not been severe on majority of the patients. Its symptoms have tended to be mild.
We have two sources of data. The first is anecdotal data from our doctors at the front line. I've been speaking to the chair of our medical association. She collects this data from all the doctors. And essentially what they are saying to us at this stage is that the cases are generally mild, seems to be slightly more people in the younger age groups, but the presentation is essentially similar to the way patients presented in the previous waves. Now, one has to be very careful in overinterpreting that because it's still very early days, in that severe cases, you know, usually take longer. They occur in, you know, weeks 2, 3, and 4. So it may be that severe cases will follow later. But certainly at this stage, with the data we're seeing in terms of these reports, there are no red flags. The second is the data we get from our admissions database. We saw an increase in the number of hospitalizations in children below the age of 5. Though that initial increase in children who are younger is now being offset, in that it might have been just an early aberration. It's now easing off, and the proportions that are being admitted have been now correcting themselves. It's also quite possible, because schools were open and preschools were open, that we may have seen those cases emerging. But even the children who were admitted were mostly mild conditions. So we haven't yet been seeing, you know, many severe cases. But again, I want to just caution, you know, we've only known about this for a week, so it's still early days.
The first COVID-19 variants, such as Delta, have infected fewer children, and their symptoms have been mild on them. But according to Dr. Salim, Omicron is infecting more children, and in some cases, the infection has been severe, requiring hospitalization and close monitoring of the patients.
We have seen several severe cases in children. We would be expecting to see that. The ICUs have reported admissions of children as well, and adults. So we are seeing severe cases. But it's very different from the previous waves. And now the previous waves, you know, there was this deluge, and we became overwhelmed with, you know, just a lot of patients arriving early on. Even though this virus is transmitting faster, we aren't seeing that same early pressure. Part of it is probably due to vaccines, and some of it may be due to the actual clinical features of the virus itself. So I think it's a mixed bag. In terms of severe cases, they are presenting very much, again, like our past cases. The usual features we see, you know, with the respiratory test, the hypoxia, we put them onto oxygen, we pronate them, put them on dexamethasone, very standard treatment regimens that we continue to use. They seem to be working fine. So from a diagnostic point of view, Omicron's not a problem, easily diagnosed. From a clinical presentation, doesn't seem to be a problem, although it's early days. And from a treatment point of view, doesn't seem to be a concern. What might be a concern is relating to whether vaccines will hold against it. And there, what we have seen in the latest information that's become available from our National Institute of Communicable Diseases is that we are seeing an increase in reinfection. So there is an early analysis from one of our centers called SACIMA that looked at the ratio of reinfections to new infections. And what we're seeing with Omicron is an increase in reinfections. The ratio is 2.4. They're higher than what we saw in our previous waves. Now, we expect some increase because we've had more past infections now, but this increase is way out of range. So that means it looks like past natural infection does not seem to be protecting to any significant extent from Omicron infection. On the vaccine front, we really don't have data yet. That's still to come. We are seeing breakthrough infections in vaccinated individuals, but so far they've been mild. But I don't want to make too much of that, still too few cases to make any comment.
Dr. Salim Karim, a South African epidemiologist and a member of the African Task Force for the Coronavirus, speaking there from Durban. Dr. Angelique Kosea is a South African physician who works as a general practitioner in Pretoria. She is the chairperson of the South African Medical Association. She was the first to detect the Omicron variant and to raise awareness about it in November this year after observing diverse clinical symptoms from patients. She told reporters last week that the Omicron symptoms are different from the symptoms of the Delta variant, which is responsible for many cases and death in more than 80% of the countries in the world.
Clinical pictures that we are seeing with the Omicron variant is totally different from the Delta, especially in regards of the loss of smell, taste, oxygen requirements, as well as what we call a tachycardia, an elevated pulse rate that we have seen quite a few times with the Delta variants. The symptoms is actually quite easy. Someone said it's very much like a cold or a flu type of symptoms. Yes, I think we can say it's very similar to that. Body aches and pains, the muscle pain, the headache, and the tiredness or fatigue that would accompany it for about 1 to 2 days. Slight sore throat, and that's more or less the majority of patients complain coming into the surgery. Mm-hmm. And why that is important to understand is if you are not on the alert or on the lookout for these type of symptoms, you would easily miss it. We also used to Delta to seeing extremely sick and ill patients coming in. And with the Omicron currently, the clinical picture is that patients don't have a severe cough and don't have a running or a blocked nose as you would see with your upper respiratory tract infections. It's quite fast spreading. Whether it's more transmissible than Delta, there is definitely a difference between the severity of symptoms experienced by patients. It's more intense in the unvaccinated people than vaccinated people.
The World Health Organization has called for calm as more information about the Omicron variant continues to be gathered. One of the observations among Omicron patients is that people who have been vaccinated against COVID-19 have experienced more mild symptoms than those who have not been vaccinated. Dr. Peter Singer is the advisor of the Director General of the World Health Organization. He told reporters last week that the emergence of a new COVID-19 variant in Africa was expected because the continent has been excluded by vaccine manufacturers who prefer to produce vaccines for rich countries because they can pay and ignore African nations because they cannot pay immediately.
This is a wake-up call to vaccinate the world. In a sense, this was almost a foreseeable event because viruses naturally mutate. And the more they spread, the more they mutate. So with the current levels of vaccine inequity, you've got places where the virus is raging around the world, and that's actually how you create variants. So the way to make every country safe is to raise those vaccination rates and vaccinate the world. We've set a target of every country vaccinating at least 40% of their population by the end of this year. And that's something that we should all band together to do. And this variant is actually a wake-up call for us to redouble our efforts to do that.
The World Health Organization has assured the public and its member states that it is working with technical partners to understand the potential impact of this variant on the existing countermeasures, including vaccines. Vaccines, the World Health Organization has noted, remain critical to reducing severe COVID-19 disease and death.
We do advocate for vaccines going to high-risk people around the world. I think it's shocking that almost a year into the global vaccination effort, only 1 in 4 health workers across the African continent is vaccinated. And so those people are very high risk, and they need vaccines to protect themselves. There's two things that can be done to vaccinate the world. First is to distribute the vaccines now. So for countries with extra stockpiles, to share those, to swap their doses with, for example, COVAX or the African Vaccine Access Team, to get those doses to people now. We need about 550 million doses to get to that 40% target by the end of the year. Secondly, is sharing the technology, which includes capacity building, the intellectual property waiver, so regions can make their own vaccines. And you can see how important that is, either in the wake of variants or in the wake of future pandemics. So this is very important to vaccinate the world, and the variant should be a wake-up call for every country to share vaccine doses now, to raise those vaccination levels right around the world so the virus doesn't rage, so it doesn't mutate, so variants aren't created.
That was Dr. Peter Singer, a special advisor to the Director General of the World Health Organization. And that was Health and Healing for this week. You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.